Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? This week we have the hunkadorilicious Keegan Hurst on the pod. But before we get into that, I'd love to pass it to my good Judy, J-E-W-D-Y, Jackson Ricken, with this week's three gay tips.
Hi, I'm Jackson Ricken, and here are three gay tips for gays dealing with sciatica. Number one, do not sit. I know sitting seems like recovery, healing, whatever. Gays cannot sit in a neutral, normal position. You have proven time and time again, so it's best to avoid it entirely. Number two, strengthening your core. Your core is essential for lumbar health. So whether it's squats, lunges, planks, sit-ups, all important. But the most important part is posting it to your story so you get the endorphins, the dopamine, the rush. It'll make you feel better. Until it wears off and it comes crashing down and you have to repeat the cycle again. And the most important thing, do not fall victim to these overpriced jackhammer devices that don't do anything. They feel good for a little bit, but jackhammering your back is not gonna fix a mechanical issue like sciatica. And besides, you can get jackhammered in other ways for free. And that was three gay tips for gays with sciatica. Back to you, Eric.
Thanks, Jackson. And if you're listening to the episode, make sure you watch the full video on YouTube, because there you will see Jackson in his full 4K HD glory. But you know him as one of the co-hosts of Happy Healthy Homo, as the first ever rugby league player to come out as gay, and you know him as a big, thick, juicy show queen. Enjoy this episode with Keegan Hurst. Keegan Hurst is on That's a Gay Ass Fucking Podcast. Keegan, today I'm feeling like a very happy, healthy homo, and I'm so grateful that this homo is here. Thank you for joining, Ears.
Thank you for having me, Eric. Yeah, I need to take tips off you on how to do a podcast, because that's the kind of energy that a podcast needs.
Yeah. Well, I love to talk to a fellow homo podcasto, and I have a lot of shit I want to get through with you, because you are, I think, our first like professional athlete on the pod. Do you get annoyed by gay people fetishizing you as an athlete?
Well, I'm not an athlete anymore. I'm old and retired now. So
You feel like once an athlete, always an athlete? Like, I feel like you could still punch
well,
me
the,
on.
The mind is still, but the body, not quite as much.
I pray for you to have a gorgeous massage. ASAP. Now, there's a lot we want to get into here, but because I like to start with a big gay ass question, Keegan, in an interview, you talked about a time that you gave Sir Ian McKellen a ride home and you sang Beauty and the Beast songs on the way. This is a real story?
This is a real story, yes. Okay. I suppose I should give you some context, right? So when I came out publicly in 2015, I had loads of people contact me, and someone who I had get in touch with me was a guy called Anthony Cotton, who's an actor. He's been in a soap over here called Coronation Street. He's been in it for 20 years now. He was one of the first gay soap characters to be on TV. He's a national treasure. He is mm-hmm. a national. He's also now my best friend. So I would say that, but he is a national treasure. And so when I first came out, he contacted me and very kindly said, "I'm sure you're getting lots of messages from lots of people, and I know this will all be new to you. It's kind of out of the realms of sport. But if you need anything, I don't want anything from you. I'm just, if I can help, I'll help." which was very sweet of him because there was a lot of people who wanted things.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we were chatting and got on really well, and he said, it's Manchester Pride, which is weirdly, it's actually Manchester Pride this weekend of us recording this. So this story is literally 9 years old to the day, because this was the Friday before.
Keegan,
so,
happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. So Andy said, do you want to come over and have dinner? Ian, he's friends with Ian McKellen. And he said, Ian has been the Grand Marshal at he's leading the parade. So we're going to go for dinner on the Friday. So I said, yeah, of course. Who's going to say no, right? At the time, I was driving like a clapped out little Peugeot, like a Peugeot 307 or something, like a crap car. And so I drove over. I wasn't drinking. I don't live in Manchester, so it was a bit of a drive. So I drove in. We had dinner. Everybody was lovely. Ian met Anthony properly for the first time, met Ian for the first time, met Anthony's partner, had a lovely dinner. It was great. The dinner comes to an end and, okay, we're going to get a taxi back. And I said, well, I've got my car. If you want, I can give you guys a lift. Thinking that they would obviously say, no, it's okay. But being the titles that they are, they said, yeah, sure, that'd be great. So in my Peugeot 307, I've got Gandalf in the front. I've got Sean from Coronation Street in the back. And at the time of, which is, it was very surreal. I mean, it is very surreal for anybody, but you know, as it was happening, I was like, this is weird. And Ian had just finished filming on Beauty and the Beast. He's Cogsworth, I think, in the film, right? And he was bemoaning the fact that Cogsworth, doesn't have a song. And so we ended up getting into singing, you know, Gaston and some of the songs from Beauty and the Beast.
No
and
then one laughs like Gaston. That one.
Exactly like that. You've done a great impression of me there, Eric.
Thanks, Keegan.
And then Ian started singing a song that he'd made up that he said this should be Cogsworth's song, which was, it was horrendous if I'm being honest. But we were all laughing and it was just really lovely. And to say that I'd never met either of them before, they were really welcoming. And yeah, I ended up actually cutting Ian off on the stage at Pride. I walked out too early. There was like, it was a great weekend.
Wow. So not only did Ian McKellen not have a song in Beauty and the Beast, but then this fucking faggot walks on stage and cuts him off at Pride. You're on a podcast saying his song was bad. I hope that we're starting a Keegan Hurst, Ian McKellen feud. I hope it gets headlines.
Me and Ian love each other far too much. I wouldn't dream of feuding with Ian.
I love, honestly, to hear about you coming out and then having these like amazing gay people reach out to you and welcome you. That is the stuff of gay dreams. But I also just picturing you singing show tunes with Ian McKellen is also a very specific.
Yeah, I mean, Ian, maybe this is an inside scoop, but Ian does not like musicals. he much prefers, he's a big Shakespearean, he much prefers a straight play, lol. We were very lucky for him to indulge us.
Yeah, no, you really kind of, that's like where all the stars are aligning, and Ian McKellen, actually, you get him singing a musical. But you know what? I like to put you on the spot here and say, okay, you've sung Beauty and the Beast with Ian McKellen. Can you give us another iconic gay person you would love to sing show tunes with? And tell me, what show tune are you singing?
Well, I'm gonna say Liza Minnelli and say Mein Herr, because when I've had a drink, my favorite thing to do is to drag a chair across the lounge and start doing the dance from Cabaret. Well, it's not the dance from Cabaret. It's an interpretation of Liza Minnelli's chair dance from Cabaret.
It's the original choreography, and every single, it is as Fosse intended. I had a feeling you were a secret Broadway stan, but hearing you say Mein Herr.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely Mein Herr. I mean, I know all the words from the Museum song as well, which is from oh, what's the name of it? What's his name from Greatest Showman, the evil one who Hugh Jackman made look nice?
Nathaniel, do you know what he's talking about?
Well, who's the guy who Hugh Jackman plays in?
P.T. Barnum.
P.T. Barnum. So it's a really old musical called Barnum.
Oh, my God. You're referencing Barnum now? Jesus.
Yeah, there's a song in there called The Museum Song, and it's that is also a party piece for me.
I have to say, you're like going above and beyond. I feel like the next thing you're gonna be like, and now let's sing from Flora and the Red Menace, all these random fucking niche musicals.
No, but the thing is, we went to we were in New York in, I think it was November, and we went into Marie's Crisis, and we were accosted by some musical theater gays who went, what's your five favorite musicals? And we were like, on the spot, didn't know what to say.
Did you say Barnum in Marie's Crisis?
I didn't say Barnum, but my boyfriend Joel, he was like, I think he might have said Mamma Mia or something, and they went, Mamma Mia? They were horrified. So Anthony, in his defense, went, well, what are your favorite five then? And one of the guys went, Pippin. And Anthony went, Pippin? Pippin has no redeeming features.
Gay on gay crime. If anybody listening has not been, Marie's Crisis is like this tiny piano bar in the West Village of New York City. Yeah. You go in and there are gay guys screaming at you or screaming at each other while one person plays a literal piano. Everybody is wasted, screaming and singing. God, I love picturing you and Joel and Anthony at Marie's Crisis. Did you at least get to sing Les Mis? That's usually a... Well, actually, you're from the UK. Has Les Mis sort of hacked you?
I mean, everybody stands up and puts their hand on the chest to Do You Hear the People Sing, right? I know that one of my favorite things was one of the staffs stood on a chair. He was quite short. He stood on a chair and he said, I'm going to sing a song now and I'm going to sing it and I don't want any of you to join in.
She said she was Nicole Scherzinger taking the microphone from that sad faggot on stage.
And it was somewhere over the rainbow. Of course it was.
Was he at least good?
He was good. To be fair to him, he was good.
Thank Judy. Well, Keegan, it is such an honor to have you on this Gay Ass podcast. And I want to ask you the famous podcast question, which is, Keegan Hurst, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Do you know what? Like, the serious, when I was a kid, I used to blame my dad. I've never met my dad, so I was like, it was his fault. But I think, on reflection, that's obviously not true. I think it was actually maybe X-Men, or, you know, the animated cartoon.
Of course.
Or Thundercats or He-Man, you know, just something where there were bare-chested men.
You're actually not the first person to say that. I want you to know there's a lot of gay guys who really saw cartoon abs and they said, I want that laying on top of me.
Yes, yes. I mean, so what if they're half cat, you know, with Thundercats? Like, you know, it's... Let your imagination run wild.
And gay guys love to call their holes their pussies. So we can lean into the cat of it all. Why not? I do, as a therapy girl, I love to lean into our trauma. And when you said you used to blame your dad, was it like the quote absent father that was like the blame? Or was it you envisioning your dad as either a gay person or like what if we can unpack that? What was that?
Yeah, so I think it was, I didn't really have any male influence when I was growing up. I've never met my dad. My younger brother and sister, their dad skipped out on my mum when I was quite young, and then she would have on-off boyfriends and things like that. So there was never really a stable male role model. I think that's kind of what part of the appeal of rugby was, because we had coaches and you were like taken under their wing and fostered. And I always enjoyed school as well. Like, I did well at school. So I think it was the kind of absent male role model in general, and because obviously my dad wasn't there, he bore the brunt of that.
Well, that's also,
which is interesting because I have a friend who had two dads. Oh, he had a dad and a stepdad who were very active, and he blamed the fact that he had too many dads. So the dads are always going to cop it, right?
No matter which way you cut it, a dad is doing something. I think it's really incredible that you, and especially the strength of your mom to have raised these three kids, and also for you to have found the community of rugby. I mean, it was probably a very macho environment that you were in, but did people ever, I was made fun of for being gay because I'm kind of just like not very A, athletic, B, straight. Would anybody clock you in the rugby world, or was it always you were pretty passable?
I think when I was I started playing rugby when I was 11, and I got called gay probably up until being about 13. Mm. And when I look back and I see the pictures of me as a kid clutching my pearls and it was shining out of me. And, you know, a blind man on a galloping horse could see that I was gay. But I think, yeah, like, you know, the kind of code switching and trying to fit in and rugby. I mean, that certainly, I suppose that helped because I found myself around lads that, you know, were straight. And so I could kind of copy them or maybe even by osmosis. I honestly don't think it was like a conscious thing of I'm going to behave like these guys. I think it was just generally I'm in this environment and it kind of seeped in.
Of course. But I think also naturally it's a survival tactic when you're that age, because whether you're conscious of it or not, you're trying to blend in. The last thing you want to be is different when you're that age, and especially as a fucking pearl clutching gay kid.
I was 6 foot at 13, 14. I was like a big ass kid, clomping around as well. So I stood out. You know, it wasn't until I was, you know, much, much older where I would actually stand up straight, because I was, you know, I stood out so much. And, you know, it was something that coaches would always say, like, you're massive, like, play like you're massive. But I was so scared of sticking out, I think, because of I don't want to draw too much attention to myself.
Yeah, no, that really resonates with me because while I was very bad at sports, I was also 6 feet tall when I was like 13. When I was bar mitzvah, I have a twin brother. He was 5 feet tall. I was 6 feet tall. My voice had dropped, his had not. And I definitely remember feeling like trying to shrink. But also, I had the disadvantage of like the coaches being like, all right, you're tall. You got to be on the basketball team. And bitch, I would get on that court, clomp, clomp, miss every fucking shot. And it was just like, and then the attention was brought even more onto me because they were like, oh, no, you're just gay and bad at this.
I mean, I was. I know this is probably going to sound ridiculous to people listening, but when I start playing rugby, the basic premise of rugby is catch a ball and run. Uh-huh. I could not do either. I was like Bambi on ice. I had it looked like someone had put my eyes in backwards. I could not catch a ball. It took me weeks to get muddy. I was like, mud. That's not gonna come out of there. Puberty was very good to me. You know, I seemed to develop a beard at the same time as hand-eye coordination. So it was, and then seemingly overnight, I got a lot better at rugby, and then I stuck with it then because I was reasonably good at it. Still had a fair bit of work to do, but in the initial stages, which I think is what a lot of kids experience at school and with sport, and maybe, you know, especially gay kids who don't want to stand out. It's, you know, when you're not good at something, it's just, it feels, you internalize it, don't you? You know, I am shit. Not, I'm just bad at this thing or I'm not good at that.
Oh yeah. God, that's very well said. I mean, I think when I was so bad at sports, I definitely internalized it as like, I'm failing at being a guy, I guess. I'm failing at fitting in. And I'm lucky that I was able to like really channel it into all the theater shit that I did, because like even though I knew deep down it was something that could be made fun of for being gay, I just like was so sort of, I don't know, what's the word? Like delusional enough to be like, you know what? I'm going to be quote unquote straight. I'm going to be closeted, but I'm going to be fucking Fagin and Oliver, and I'm going to slay the house down boots. Consider yourself at homo, and then I'm going to deal with the gay shit later. But for a lot of us listening that might not know your herstory. So 2015, you became the first British professional rugby player to come out as gay. Huge, huge deal. Of course, there was all this publicity. But a lot of us listening might be Americanos who aren't as plugged into the rugby world. So I think most of us just know like the hot rugby calendars.
And then the Spanish TikTok account.
Jesus H. I'm glad that you're plugged into that too. Does that get you going? Does it take you back?
Well, I mean, I'm like Mad-Eye Moody. I'm plugged into everything. I miss nothing.
Does it trigger you? Does it make you sad to miss the sport? Does it just make you, or does it give you spank bank material?
Maybe a bit of both. I mean, do you know what, though? That is a weird thing, because when I was playing, as a player, there was never, you know, you can appreciate that someone's good looking. But it's something I get asked quite a lot of this, but it was just work, and you would not want to do anything to make that weird.
Of course,
I was also very aware that I was, for some of the guys, I was the only gay person that they knew. And I felt a lot of, not that, maybe it was put on me a little bit by media, or it was certainly something that I felt that I wanted to be a good example, because, we get bad press, don't we, as gays? And I mean, not that I would have been trying to wank off the lads in the shower or anything, but I mean, to be fair, the straight lads are doing that to each other anyway. Like, there's nowhere gayer than a rugby changing room. Let me, like, that is.
Oh, I've seen the clips of like the ass slapping and the.
Yeah, it's gay. Like, it's so gay. The lads are, they know exactly what they're doing as well. Like, they're just.
We're all animals, and sometimes you just need to jerk your girk in a shower lurk. But
attention is attention.
And that's actually, there's a lot of straight guys in theater that I think are not gay, but they just like attention. I'm sure there's a lot of rugby players, especially when you look like a rugby player too, where it's like, you know what you got, and what you got should be touched, no matter who, no matter if the hand has hair on it or not. What's the deal, though? Like, can you give us a brief rundown? Obviously, rugby is you throw the ball, you run. Rugby?
So this is especially for you guys across the pond. So there are two kinds of rugby. This is where it gets confusing. There's rugby union, which is what you probably know as rugby, and there's rugby league, which is the one that I played, which is not as worldwide as rugby. Still have national team, Australia, All Blacks, still have all that. Rugby is kind of synonymous in those countries. But rugby union is probably a little bit more well-known. So I was the first British rugby league player to come out as gay. Gareth Thomas had come out as a rugby union player. I was the first rugby league player to come out. And yeah, I think I was better, to be honest with you. It's faster. It's more physical, in the sense of it's quicker. People are getting whacked a lot. I'll tell you what it's like. It's like American football, but rather than stopping after a tackle, you get up and you keep going. And you do this for 80 minutes. We don't stop. There's no stoppages. And it's not like what people think of rugby, where you all pile on each other. Like, that's just a mess. It's very fast paced, and it's more based in the north of England for whatever reason. It's not as big as what rugby union is, but it's fast, it's physical. You've got to be in good physical shape to be able to do it. It's very physically demanding.
Sure, especially the 80 minutes no stopping. Does it, what if you like, you wake up this morning what hurts the most on your body after all those years of rugby now that you're retired? Is it
my back. I've got a herniated disc. I mean, I sound like I'm 36. My back is sore. I've had a couple of ankle reconstructions.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I didn't play rugby, but I did play Papa Bear and the Berenstain Bears live, and I did herniate my disc doing that show. So, you know, we're both athletes in a sense.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I actually busted my knee in high school, falling off the stage. I was Reuben. I was the eldest of the children of Israel. When I was singing those Canaan days, I ended up off the stage on Keegan. One performance.
See, it all goes back to your Broadway herstory. If anybody brings up a theatrical production in high school, so you did Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. What other shows?
In primary school, I was Bill Sykes in Oliver.
Of course you were. You were the fucking villain asshole straight man. God.
Yeah, exactly. And then I did Grease in high school as well.
Don't tell me who you played. I'm going to tell you.
Go on.
The way you started to say that, you felt sad. You wanted to be cast as Danny Zuko, but in fact, you were cast as Duty.
No, I actually, I said I can't do a big part because there was loads of stuff going on with rugby. So I ended up playing...
Teen Angel.
The guy who sings Beauty School Dropout, yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's actually a great part, though. You kind of get on stage, you park and bark, and then you...
Yeah, it's very Elvis and Joseph, isn't it? You just come on, you do your bit, you get off.
Yeah. Listen, you're 8 shows a week. You are just watching the game backstage, and then you get on, you get your applause, you take off your sparkly jacket, and then you eat your... What's a British food that I can reference?
Fish and chips.
You eat your fish and chips, bitch. Well, it's incredible to talk to someone that's like has such an athletic past, but also a love for theater. I want to commend you on your versatility, if I may. But something else that you do that I really am impressed by is the podcast that you and Joel have. So for people who don't listen, you should. It's called Happy Healthy Homo. Your partner, Joel Wood. How long have you two been together?
We've been together about two and a half years now.
I love. Well, you have an amazing, amazing banter, and it seems like you've been together much longer because
it feels like it.
I'm sure you're probably like an old married couple now. Well, especially, you know, I was talking about this on the podcast with, I believe, with Sam Sanders, recently talking about how it's difficult to date someone but also have a professional collaboration with them. Mm-hmm. How do you make that work between the two of you?
Yeah, so I think what's made it easier is because before Joel's a YouTuber and has been a YouTuber for years, so he's more of like the influencer type of person. Mm-hmm. So he's always done that. So it was I wouldn't necessarily consider myself an influencer. I use social media as a thing to talk shit to lots of people at the same time. So it was, I think that kind of made it easy because we get it, we get what's going on, and it's not like introduce, well, this is how content works and this is how this works and this is how, you know, it's like someone's peeked behind the curtain and they know what's going on. So when we'd had a few drinks one Friday night and said, why don't we do a podcast? We've got stuff to say. And we should call it Happy Healthy Homo. It was literally the first name we came up with.
Wow.
And then we stuck with it. So good ideas come from drinking. and then we kind of got into it. And I think what's made it easy is because we're wired quite differently. So the things that I like doing and, I'll do the research. I don't mind doing the research a bit. So I don't mind putting the like map of the episode together and things like that. But when it comes to the technical side of stuff or any kind of editing or that's Joel's domain. So we've kind of easily, it's not been a hassle to delegate who does what. And then we just try to, like compartmentalize, this is Happy Healthy Homo time. So we both have time out in the calendar, usually Wednesday morning. This is Happy Healthy Homo time. We're either recording it or we're doing something for the podcast. And then we kind of try and park it. And if we are going to do it, we'll try to bring it up at a specific time so that we're not, because otherwise every conversation is, you know, house, dogs, podcast, and then it's like, where's the relationship? This is just logistics.
No, that's really we love a boundaried king, but also I think I struggle with that of like this kind of seeps into every part of my life in many ways, and I think like I've been better with Matt about not bringing it up or getting feedback every other hour, but it's hard when you're working on a project that you're so passionate about. I mean, I'm sure
100%.
I'm sure the podcast is so much work, as you know, and it's also, you really want to do a good job with it. And especially for your show, so many people are writing in with questions and you're talking about some pretty like, you know, deep gay topics. I was even looking earlier talking about sort of like, ageism in the community, the tribes on Grindr, about sort of the people's preferences, which of course lead into like racism or, you know, body issues. But also, I love that one of the questions that someone, I recently watched an episode where you talked about, someone said, help, am I cheating on my boyfriend when I watch porn? I love that you just like sit with Joel and you just fucking get into it.
Yeah, I think, because we kind of do the regular episodes and then we do the, we call them helpful homo ones where, mm-hmm. where people are writing in. And I don't know what's the best way. I don't want to say like I don't have a filter because I'm not a fucking asshole. But I haven't got time for pussyfooting around things. And I would like to think that if one of my friends came to me, and that's how I view those, is I'd like to think that this is a friend who's come to me and this is what they're saying to me. Yeah. And sometimes it's babe and it's putting an arm around them and it's saying, this is what you need to do. And have you tried this? And it's been, and sometimes it needs that kind of deft touch. And sometimes some people need shaking and saying, get your shit together. You're worrying about things that don't matter. That's how I try to look at it. And that's how, and me and Joel are very similar in that sense, although Joel is probably words it a little bit less strongly than I do.
That's what's so good about the way that you do it, though. And I think that it's sometimes you need someone to give it to you very directly. And I think that I listen to some advice podcasts actually where people write in, and when the hosts are not finding the balance of like being direct, but you know, full of kindness or empathy, and if it's only direct and but then it's like lacking any of the empathy, it just comes across as like an asshole talking down to the people. But you're never talking down. You're saying, this is, you know, it is not cheating if you need to jerk your girk by watching a bear sit on a twink. It's okay. But again, it's whenever people write in for this, it's something I'm so grateful for. But I also know that just like you, you want it to come across as a friend and not as like you know more or that you are looking down on the listener, because that's not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think obviously being a coach and the experience that I've got doing that, you know, I've learned that over the years. I mean, as a coach, people are literally paying me to tell them things that they don't want to hear. That's what they're doing, right? So it's, and I've gone through that as a younger coach, trying to figure that out. Like sometimes being too nice, sometimes being too direct, and it isn't art in the sense of being able to, and this is what's difficult about doing it over a podcast, because you don't know the person on the other side. You can only pick up from what's written. But, you know, when you do it with a person, you can kind of gauge how they are and what makes them tick, and being able to read the room, for want of a better phrase. But it's, I think the reason that I'm so passionate about it with the podcast and also with the coaching is because there have been times in my life where I needed someone to say, Keegan, buck the fuck up. Yeah. And there have also been times where people have said that, and I've actually needed someone to say, do you know what? You're going to be okay. Things are all right. Like you're going to figure it out. And I'm very lucky in that I have like great friends who do that now, but certainly when I was younger, and probably before I came out, I definitely didn't have that. And I beat myself up a lot for things that I made mistakes about, or I'd sit and procrastinate on things, or sometimes you just need, you just need pointing in the right direction. I think we've all got our own steam and our own, but we just need a little shunt in the right direction sometimes.
But you're also spot on that it takes the best type of friend is someone who has the emotional intelligence to read what you need in that moment. And it makes me almost like get a little teary thinking about the moments when you need the hug and you're not given it and how lonely that can feel versus when you're with a friend that can read what you need. And whether it's the pep talk or like, stop worrying about that, you're completely fine, take a breath. If we lean into the gratitude of it all, it's for those of us who have those people that can be such strong support systems and know what we need in that moment. I know who I'm thinking of right now who can do that. I know you're thinking of who that is for you. People listening can. And it's the sign of a great either friendship or, you know, therapist relationship that it's like you can find someone that can read what you need. But because I'm so lucky to be talking to you, can I ask for some of your advice right now?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, Keegan Hurst, I need, especially since you in your coaching program and you as an ex-rugby player, you talk a lot about, you know, fitness and helping people feel their best. I have a mental block when it comes to working out. I have posted to my Instagram, I'm up to 10 push-ups a day. Would you please congcongratulate me?
Well done.
Thanks, Keegan. So I'm up to 10 push-ups a day. I do hate exercise. I have PE trauma. We would do shirts versus skins. I didn't want to take my shirt off. I fucking hated PE. The PE coach was a total fucking asshole. If you're listening to this.
what's his name?
Coach. Can you imagine? I was also like on a podcast yesterday. It hasn't come out yet, but I almost fully named him there. So I'm just going to go on every podcast and name this one specific straight asshole in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm picturing his name right now. If anybody is a medium or a psychic, I'm picturing his name and his fucking dumpy fucking khakis. Anyways, I do not enjoy exercise. I have a bit of a body dysmorphia where I know that I'll feel better if I work out more. I'm not like trying to like, you know, drastically change my appearance. I just like want to feel better. How do I get over my PE trauma?
Okay. So what I would say is, I think when people say I don't like exercising, it's the same as when people say I don't like reading. I don't think people dislike the act of exercising or reading, but they might dislike the exercise that they are doing or the book that they are reading. Right. So I think this is something I talk about with my guys. So I've trained since I was probably 14 years old, and up until, you know, the last couple of years when I retired from rugby, the reason that I trained was to be a better rugby player. That was it. That was why I trained. And so I don't like going in the gym. I don't like being in the gym. I've never liked being in the gym. But because it was a means to an end, and it made me play better, and I felt better afterwards, like you get in the gym, I don't want to do this session, did it anyway, felt good, yada, yada, yada. Even now I find it difficult to train for the sake of training. So I'm doing a Hyrox in October because I need something to be able to work towards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think when people say they don't like exercising, they're probably like me and they don't like exercising for the sake of it. So find something that you like doing. Try racket sport, try a class, try anything. Because social media would depict that the only way to exercise is lifting heavy weights, and it's not. And don't get me wrong, lifting heavy weights is good for you. Mm-hmm. But if the only reason that the only way we'll all ever stick to something is if we actually like it. So it's become so ingrained in me. It's just part of something that I do. And I like being able to perform well in the things that I'm doing. And that's why I go to the gym. For me, the gym is a means to an end. For people who, you know, maybe want to run a marathon, they're going to run. I would probably still go in the gym because I wouldn't want to lose all my muscle mass. And again, it becomes a means to an end. You know, if you like playing squash and you want to be able to get around, maybe you do some more power related stuff, or maybe you do, you know, you want to do stuff to prevent injuries, and so it becomes a means to an end. So I think rather than looking at it as, because the thought of going to the gym four times a week for the rest of my life and not doing anything else makes me want to stick pins in my own eyes.
Yeah.
But doing it to make me perform well at something else that I will enjoy, you know, whether, and again, like I said, you don't have to lift weights. Go swimming, go to Orange Theory class, go to whatever you, if you enjoy it, do it. Like, you don't have to do bodybuilder, Instagay, like workouts. You can, there's as long as you're moving your body and you feel good doing it, then happy days. Obviously, if you're like someone who's saying, oh, well, I want to build muscle, then you have to go through the process of what that is. And then you have to ask yourself, is the juice worth the squeeze? But if you're just doing it because I want to move well and I want to feel good, then it doesn't matter what you do as long as you enjoy doing what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot, because I think it's thinking about, for me, it's like an on switch or an off switch. To me, the on switch is I have to go to the gym 3-4 times a week till the day I die, I'll kill myself. Or the off switch is I eat my Ben and Jerry's and I sit on the couch and don't do anything. So it's like, I know there is a gray area. And
yeah,
and I think
we all like to go all in on stuff, don't we? We like to be all or nothing. Something I say to the guys is, what about going all in on being moderately healthy? Do you know what I mean? Like, if I can't do 3 sessions, I'll do 2. You know, if I'm going to go out and have some drinks and a pizza tonight, but you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to have a salad.
Yeah. And get out and go
for what. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I totally get it. It's also, I think, like, for me, I did it as a half joke, but half real, of like, I'm going to do 5 push-ups today instead of going from like nothing to an hour workout. And it actually, and I did 5, and it was hard for me in a way that I was like slightly embarrassed by, but I was like, whatever, I'm going to do 5 every day. And then I tried to do 6, and I tried to do 7. I was like, oh, I'm actually like getting up. And I made it a part of my routine where I'll walk my dog and then at the same time every day, and then I'll get back and I'll do the 10 push-ups and maybe do a little yoga. And I'm like, okay, that is enough for the day. And I'm hoping that I can continue that trajectory, because I am starting to like feel a little better. But it's just interesting how we hold on to the past attachments we have, especially when it comes to whether it's fitness or whatever the fuck. But it's also like you're saying, the Instagay of it all really is a mind fuck. I feel like there's the comparison, or like people, especially because people can take photos looking human.
It's so, social media is so difficult as well, because what I love, when we go on holiday, if we ever go to, I love going to a water park, because when you go to a water park, what you actually see are real people who with real bodies.
Yeah.
And you probably might see a handful of people who've got abs, and most people don't. Whereas when you go on Instagram, you are force fed the, you know, the 0.5% of the population. And obviously 0.5 of 8 billion is quite a lot of people. So yes, there are a lot of people in great shape, but that's not real life, and it's not real people, and they don't live real lives like the rest of us.
No. Publicly say fuck abs? I feel like whatever institution tried to place abs as the ideal beauty standard, I understand a strong core is important, Keegan. I understand that we need to, you know, support our spines. But I don't, like, we're on Love Island this year, if I may, they were like, oh my God, does he have abs? Yeah, he has abs. Can you believe he has abs? And it's like, who the fuck cares about abs? I don't care.
Yeah, I think historically people have said, oh, well, they represent hard work and they represent this, but they don't really represent, the only thing they represent is, because you get abs from dieting, right? And it's also, they don't really serve a function. As like you said, as long as they're strong, if you don't need abs, so what I'm saying is, if you're not a fit Instagram fitness model, you don't need abs.
If I had abs, I would look insane.
Yeah, so I think as well, like, you know, you have, like, steroids is such a big thing as well that doesn't get talked about. Mm. You know, we've really blurred the idea of what a healthy male body looks like. You know, some of the comments that you'll see are wild. Someone who's in a, like, good physique, but they're not shredded and they don't have boulder shoulders, but they're in good natural shape, and people going, do you even lift? And it's just like, it's it's so insidious, especially for younger guys who are like, is this how I have to be to be deemed to have some value? It's because people don't talk about the steroids that they take, because a lot of people do. And I'm not saying everybody in good shape takes steroids. I'm not like some bitter old queen, you know, who's really mad at everybody for looking great when I sit and inhale Ben and Jerry's every night. But it's it is really warped what a healthy body is. And I think that's why it's so important to get off your phone and get out into real life and meet people and see different, you know, different shaped bodies.
No, it's get off your phone and go to the water park. That's what. Because you skirted over that. And producer Nathaniel is a huge roller coaster tycoon homo, and you're a water park homo. I used to go when I was like doing summer camp. It was one of my favorite things. I haven't been in literally decades. Can you just quick snapshot? You're at the water park. Favorite ride?
I don't know. I've been because I've been with the kids. So anything where you can all get in and there's like three or four of you on a dinghy kind of thing and it goes down the slide.
I promise I'm not just a horny fucking creepy queen, but I just picture like, I love a dad. And when you're at a water park, do you at least enjoy it? Just 5% of your enjoyment looking at the hot dads?
Well, I mean, you've got to enjoy the decor, right?
Of course. We're first and foremost lovers of design, and whether that design is God-given or man-made.
Yeah, nature. Enjoy the work of man and the work of God, yes.
Oh, hot. Speaking of the work of man, you've tweeted about Pedro Pascal. Is it you're just a fan of his work, or you would like to slurp his girk?
Yeah, but sure, yeah, why not? I do love Pedro Pascal. I love Pedro Pascal in... I'm a massive nerd, so I loved like Game of Thrones, and so obviously he was in that. I'm rewatching it with Joel because he'd never seen it, and we've just Pedro Pascal has just left the show. Won't give anything away. Someone's not watched it, but you know, I'm a big, like, I love Star Wars. So I mean, you don't see the fucker in Mandalorian, but he is in it. You know, what was it called? The Last of Us. I love The Last of Us.
Oh yeah.
I think he's a cool guy, isn't he?
Totally. And very, I mean, amazing actor, amazing guy. Do you, since maybe some listeners might want to get a peek into your psyche, do you have a celebrity crush that's been a constant for you?
I mean, outside of the obvious, you know, your Henry Cavills and your, I'm not off the top of my head where I go, oh, do you know, he's, yeah, I don't.
You can just say Joel.
Joel knows that. he wouldn't say he was a celebrity. Neither would I.
Well, a gorgeous answer. And I do, unfortunately, have to get us towards the final stretch of this gay-ass interview by asking you a very important question, Keegan. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
I thought I'd go with Jessica Lange, but I think I'm going to go with I think I'm just going to go old school and go Bette Midler.
You continue to surprise me on this gay ass podcast. I'm a very happy, healthy homo. For you to say Bette fucking Midler, give me your Bette origin story. When you say Bette, are you thinking of a specific film?
I mean, obviously, I loved Hocus Pocus as a kid and as an adult.
Of course.
You know, Beaches is great. I also loved that she wanted to call her Vegas show Oy Vegas. Hello Dolly as well. She did Hello Dolly, didn't she? So,
Don't you wish that you could have been back in the bathhouse days when she was performing in San Francisco and you, like, after sucking some guy off, you go and hear Bette Belt? Are you joking? That would have been heaven on earth.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, icons, the word icon is thrown around a lot, but she definitely warrants it.
She really does. And I, just as a slight plug, when we had Gary Jannetty on the podcast, he wrote on and produced Bette's singular season of her sitcom Bette, and he loved working with her, and I got to see her play Dolly on Broadway, and she's just like, for me, it's sure Hocus Pocus, but it's also First Wives Club. I think it was like one of the first movies I saw when I was younger that like really spoke to my gay heart. Powerful yeah. women saying fuck you to their asshole straight ex-husbands, like a drunk Goldie Hawn.
Beaches as well, you know, women in solidarity. And,
yes. And know, Beaches also is becoming a musical. Have you know that? So
no, I did not know that.
Keep your eyes peeled. You theater queen. Well, listen, I have so loved chatting with you. And before I officially round us out here, I would love to ask you, Keegan, you were such a huge proponent of releasing shame and coming out in a very public way. What would you say is the headline that you're trying to leave people with now through your coaching, through your podcast? What's the message that you want people to lead with?
There's no wrong way to be. And there's no wrong way to be. Just I know people say just do you, but I have tried to be so many different versions of me for what lots of different reasons, and I am happiest and healthiest when I'm me. And you know what? Embarrassment is you know the best version of you is the cringiest version of you. And you know I do. Dad jokes, I embarrass my kids, I say stuff that I probably shouldn't, but do you know what, I feel very comfortable in my own skin and who I am and what I'm about. So do you know what, if a fat gay kid from a council estate in the north of England can do it, then there's no reason you can't. So
Keegan, so well said. It's been truly a huge honor and excitement to have you on the podcast. And can you tell the listeners where to follow you and how to find you?
They can follow me on TikTok, on Instagram, just at Keegan Hurst. I'm not very adventurous. If you want to check out the coaching that we do, we've got, there's Instagram, there's Gay Man's Coaching or gaymanscoaching.com. And you can check out and see what we do with the guys there.
Amazing. Keegan, thank you so much. Everybody go follow Keegan, listen to Happy Healthy Homo, and I'll see you on the rugby field.
Yeah, see you there, Eric.
Thank you so much, Keegan. And thank you for spreading awareness on the cast recording we all need to bear witness to, Barnum. I cannot wait to see you next week on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And remember to watch us on YouTube and subscribe to the Patreon if you want more bonus gay ass content. I'll see you next week. Mwah.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. I hope you're ready for the most dippable chicken in McDonald's history. Dip it in all the sauces. Dip it in that hot sauce in your bag. Dip it in your McFlurry. Your dip is your business. McCrispy strips at McDonald's.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. Datemyage.com.